Welcome back, listeners.
Welcome back.
It's your favorite podcast with your favorite podcast hosts.
Other and Sarah. Yes.
Yay.
We are here.
Wow. It is an early Wednesday morning.
It is so bright and so early.
So bright and early.
I literally rolled out of bed, threw on clothes, and came here.
I know.
You are getting fresh, Caleb, today.
We love fresh Caleb. I don't care how you come to us as long as you're present. Yes, as long as you come. And yesterday was Caleb's birthday.
Oh my God, happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday,
I'm so old.
How old are you?
27.
Wow.
Just
you're
kidding.
Younger than I thought.
I'm 34.
34. Yeah.
Born in 1990, so March 12th, that's me, Pisces.
Great day. Woo-hoo. Great day that a great person was
honestly,
born.
Honestly, the world became a better place.
It honestly did.
For
I
me
feel
anyway.
Like that. For everyone who would know you in their lives.
Right, yeah.
How was your birthday?
It was decent. We actually spent a lot of time here in the studio working with Kat. Mm-hmm. Cantrell on our kind of side piece or our project that we're working on.
Yeah.
And that was a lot. I was kind of shaken to my core.
Yeah.
So yeah, I then went to work.
Oh no.
Which was fine. Except I was like, you know, emotionally and psychologically
head.
Like activated,
yes.
You know, and then I was at work and people were asking me for burgers and I was like, yeah, I could do that for you. Totally. You know,
I just discovered the ways I sabotage my life and you want a burger?
All the while in my head, I'm like screaming and crying. I'm like, everything is fine.
Yeah, that was interesting. I actually have been thinking about that since. And I'm like, you know, Kat is so compassionate.
Oh my God. And such a gentle touch.
Yes, she is. And loving and kind. And
she's like such a mom.
Yeah, she is. Someone like her is very necessary to have those types of conversations with.
It's like, here's the ways that you're being a bad boy.
And,
but
she doesn't even say that.
No.
But yeah.
No, she would never say those words.
She would never. it activated me too.
Yeah.
It was a lot to take in, a lot to sit with.
There's like some digesting happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
It really is. But the necessary work, you know, I was talking to my friend Marie about it and I was like, this kind of feels like what they called shadow work. You know, where like, and I've been so interested by, you know, that term itself because I like the darkness.
Yes.
You know, but it's that part of you that you don't want to look at, the part that you're not proud of. And you kind of have to look at it and see it in order to address it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It feels healthy in a lot of ways, but also it was a lot. So
it was a lot, and it's only March, and we've got months of this shit left to go.
Yeah,
this was day one.
Yeah.
So listeners, just be ready for our hot mess of emotional love lifery that will be coming your way at some point.
It's gonna be exciting for everybody to like look at us and be like, hey, look at these losers.
They already do.
their lives are a mess. My life isn't so bad.
I had yesterday or a couple days ago when we were at the library, I was getting coffee and one of the baristas who used to wait on us at PO works at the library. And I was like, oh, you're here. And I mentioned your name. And the other barista at Roasters was like, you do the podcast with Caleb. And I was like, yes, I do. She was like, I was listening to an episode with my girlfriend, and she wasn't really listening, but I was. And all of a sudden, she heard you guys start talking about masturbating and was like, what the hell are you listening to?
You had to be paying attention, bitch.
That's exactly what she said. You can't just pick up in the middle of this conversation.
No.
You had to have been listening.
Yeah, there's context.
Yes.
There's always context for masturbation.
Yeah, and even when there's not, like, the context is just being in your body. That is the context.
Yeah, embodied masturbation.
Mm-hmm. I say that to say, I think our listeners know who we are.
They do.
We haven't made it clear.
And that there's going to be innuendo and there's going to be talks about all the things that life has. And sometimes that includes masturbation.
If we're lucky. If we're lucky, it includes it.
Anyway. I was wondering like how many times I used that word, you know,
just in
and
general,
just in the intro, you know, where we're talking to
it's
each
been
other
like 4 minutes.
I know,
we again, need a sorry, word counter, Chris. My mom was like, I love that Caleb at least acknowledged that I listened to the podcast. I was like, yeah, I'm over it. You've gotten enough apologies from me.
Well, God bless you, Chris, for putting
God
up with
bless
us right now.
God
anyway
bless the prude ears.
Oh. Sorry, I just was thinking.
Okay.
Prude. Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to move on from that.
Okay, cool. And close that chapter. Next chapter.
So we have a guest with us today.
Shut the front door.
Yeah, we love a good guest.
I love
guests. In the other studio.
I love having a threesome. It's so nice.
It's way more fun than just our normal
No. Don't get me wrong. I love our intimacy. Okay. I love our personal, you know, interesting take on life with just each other.
Okay.
You know,
yes.
But it is interesting and fun. It makes things
fresh.
A little fresh, you know, when
spicy.
We add a little, you know, a third person. It's nice. Yeah.
Yes. I agree. You do know I'm a fan of threesomes.
I did know that actually.
Mm-hmm. So Kale's right. It's always nice when we have someone here to join in our fun.
And we have someone who is so intelligent.
So intelligent.
And so sexy.
So sexy.
Would you help us welcome our friend Hemi Collier?
Woo! Come on down, Hemi.
I am mad. First off, I'm mad I wasn't born. It's masturbation.
There's plenty of time.
Oh, you can always join in a conversation about it if you want.
I don't want to talk about this. I want to talk about that conversation.
Well, maybe it'll wrap around and, you know.
Come on, let's do it. We're talking about diversity.
Right.
We got to diversify our conversation.
Inclusive sex toys.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Hemi, would you do us a favor and tell the listeners what it is that you do? Or maybe, you know, I'm going to try it.
Okay, go for it.
Hemi is the Senior Diversity Officer and Senior the Director of Intercultural Life.
There you go.
At Cornell University. And
Cornell College.
Cornell College. Ooh, my bad. Mm-hmm. Cornell College. Yes. That's in Mount Vernon, Iowa.
Yes.
But he's also the coach for the women's lacrosse team.
Yes. One of two.
A coach.
You did pretty good.
You did good.
Good job, Caleb.
You did good.
You know, there's a lot of words there.
You did good.
You do a lot, Hemi. That seems like a lot of things to be doing.
Absolutely. Almost too much.
Yeah. Your plate is full.
It's definitely full. I think some people think it's not full enough. But
would that be your bosses and such?
No, I wouldn't say them. Sometimes my students be like, hey, Hemi, I need you to. No, I can't.
No, sorry, not today, sorry. Baby.
I love y'all. I do. Mm-hmm. But no, I can't help you today. But no, it is a full plate. I guess that's kind of why I got into education, just to kind of do the stuff that I do. So, but no, I should appreciate y'all having me on
early in the AM. Yeah, we're glad to have you.
Mm-hmm. So glad. Will you explain to us what it is that you do at Cornell?
Yeah.
Ooh, explain what it is I do. That's a tough question. And the reason why I say it's a tough question, because sometimes it depends on the day. Sometimes it depends on the week, the block. But overall, so I'll break it down with my three roles, right? I'll start probably with the easiest one, the assistant women's lacrosse coach. That I do some recruiting, but you know, I kind of handle all of our defensive stuff, and I coach young women in college lacrosse.
Did you play lacrosse?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely
That's
not.
That's what I'm interested in. That's fabulous.
I did not play lacrosse. I grew up playing football, running track, basketball, things like that.
Mm-hmm. The normal people sports.
Yeah, normal stuff, right? normal Midwest stuff, right?
Right.
But no, I didn't play lacrosse growing up. But what's funny about men's and women's lacrosse, they're completely different. Even if I did play men's lacrosse, it has nothing to do with it.
It's a completely different
game.
Yeah.
The only thing that's the same is the net and the ball.
Okay.
Other than that, the field's different, rules are different. The equipment is different, everything's different. So yeah, so I coach women's lacrosse, and then the second part of my role is director of intercultural life, and that one is more student facing.
Yeah.
So I work real directly with students. Earlier I joked about, you know, students like, hey, me, could you? That's that piece of
sure.
it, right? So provide different resources, provide advising, provide programs, and directly with students. I would say the bulk of my work from day to day is dealing with students.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not planned that way, it just kind of happens. So one of my offices, and I say one of them, we kind of have two areas.
I was about to say you have multiple offices.
We have two on campus, right? And so one of them is in Stoner House. Ha ha. And it's the name of it. It's called Stoner House. And so it's a house.
Mm.
So we have like a kitchen in there, a bathroom, we have TV. It's kind of set up in a way for people, kids, and not call them kids, young people.
They're young adults, yeah.
Young. Sometimes they act like kids.
Okay, but honestly, people who are just turning 21 and 22 coming into the bar to get drinks, I call them kids.
Yeah, I do.
They're children.
They are.
You know,
that's how you
like
know you're
their brain.
Old.
Their brain is not fully developed yet. You are still a child.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
That is definitely how I know I'm getting old. Because I'm like these kids. I'm like, okay.
Oh shit.
All right, they ain't kids. Shit. Sometimes, man. So yeah, I work with them closely, like in there. Then I also have like a small, I guess you can say satellite office in our commons on campus. And so they come in there. Sometimes I'm working on stuff. Hey, me, I need to talk. And then sometimes the conversations are like, all right, no, this will probably take 5-10 minutes.
Mm.
And some of the conversations are like, oh shit, okay, we might need to close the door on this
and settle in.
Yeah, need to settle in.
Straddle up.
Yeah, so it's I do a lot of that, and then my.
Just the straddle up.
Isn't it a saddle up?
We'll go with straddle up.
Okay, great, perfect.
Let's go with it. We're gonna keep it going.
Put your seatbelt on.
we're gonna keep it going. Right. I straddle up. So then the senior diversity officer, that's a little bit more administrative.
Okay.
That's a lot of, you know, working with different policies, you know, working on different committees with the board, with the administration, with faculty, a lot of the, I guess you can say, boring work, so to speak, right?
Sure.
Hey, all right, well, what does this policy mean? Well, okay, well, are we being equitable in this space? Well, let's look at this, right? And so a lot of that, so the senior diversity officer role cut is a lot of that. And then, like I said, day to day, man, depends on the day.
It's all over the place.
It is all over the place. I try to keep things organized, but I mean, if you met me, I'm not the most organized person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I'm organized.
Oh,
shit.
Sure.
Oh, in my mind, I got it all laid out.
I feel like that's the kind of person who like has like a crazy desk, you know, where there's just papers everywhere and there's things piled up.
Yep.
And it's like, don't touch it because it's organized to that person.
Exactly. I know exactly where everything is.
Yep. There you go.
Usually.
Yeah.
But no, so that's like that's kind of I guess the rundown of what I do. You know, I'm also in charge of our diversity committee on campus. Well, I'm not saying in charge, I'm the chair of it. So I hate saying, well, I'm in charge, but I'm the chair of our diversity committee on campus. So that has like it represents myself, different other administrators, faculty, staff, and students as well. And so it's not really a body that we come in and we make decisions in terms of, okay, this has to happen, but no, we're kind of a consultant body.
Sure.
So when things happen on campus or if we wanted to do some student, faculty, staff, or even students, be like, hey, we want to do this. Does this fit into what our mission is?
Sure.
No. Or yes, but change this or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I do a lot. I tend to do a lot. And then, of course, like every other job, there's those other duties as assigned.
Right. That aren't written in the job description.
Absolutely not.
Right. I know about that.
The stuff you get voluntold to do.
Voluntold.
I do.
Yeah,
I've had to do a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm going to segue from that into what we're here to talk about today, which is DEI. And I think it's something that's really important to all three of us, creating spaces for diversity, inclusion, and equity to exist. But I also think it's one of those words or paraphrases that people throw out all the time and have no idea what it really means.
Mm-hmm. Like what it looks like.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I feel like for the average person that doesn't pay attention or doesn't watch the news, they hear DEI and they think blacks want to teach about slavery to make white people feel shameful.
Right.
But DEI, that's like the smallest little sliver on the DEI scale. So can you explain to us kind of what diversity, equity, and inclusion is?
I mean, it's, you're right. So usually when people hear DEI or intercultural life or multiculturalism, so on and so on, immediately folks go to race and ethnicity, right? All right, DEI, yeah, this is for so black folks can take over the world. No, right? No, it's not about that. So So first you got to kind of break out the three terms in there, because once again, folks try to lump all three of them together as if they're one thing. They're mm-hmm. one thing, and, yeah. and it's not, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll start with diversity. And so with diversity is basically just that, just differences of people, differences of things, places, thoughts, ideologies, whatever, right? It's just, it's all it really is, just a difference of whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And that includes race, ethnicity, gender, socioeconomic status, ability, spirituality, and so on and so on. So there's all these different things, right? And so there's that. Then you have equity. And equity is basically the act of fairness, right? Like how am I allowing folks to get the things that they need, providing the resources across in a fair and equitable manner, right?
Yeah.
Providing different resources, providing different needs, providing different...
Right, because equity and equality are different.
Completely different.
Right.
Sometimes they can be one and the same, sometimes they're not, right?
Sure.
Of course, equality is same, equal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the example that I like to use, and in my mind it makes sense. If it doesn't, then you won't take it anyway. So example I like to use, right? So let's say Sarah and I walk in with the same exact resume, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we went to not different schools or whatever, but same similar resume, mm-hmm. right? You look at it like basically one and the same, right? And so if we're both offered the job, the equitable and equal thing to do is give us the both same pay, mm-hmm. right? We have the same experience, same background, whatever. Give us the same pay. That's equitable and equal. Now, if we walk in and Sarah has a much better resume than I do, mm-hmm. right? The equitable thing would be to give her the higher pay and me the pay that fits my resume,
sure.
right? But if you say, hey, you have to be equal, so now we're getting the same pay. It's equal, but is it equitable?
No. Sure, right.
Right, so now Sarah did all this work, and now we making 200 grand, and I'm sitting like, yeah, I don't got nothing she got. So that's not equitable. So that's like the example that I like to use, the difference between equitable and equal.
I think the way that it was always described to me is that different people need different things to get to the same starting line.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, that like what I need to get to the same place is different than what you do or, what Sarah needs. But we're trying to make sure that we all are coming from the same footing.
Right,
exactly. The same starting line, mm-hmm. so we can do this thing together.
Right, exactly. So that's where the diversity and the equity combine, right?
Sure.
So we have different backgrounds, we have different needs. And so understanding there's a diversity in our needs, the equitable thing is to make sure, okay, how do I provide what you need for, the things that you need for your needs? Why mm-hmm. is Sarah getting the thing that she needs for her needs and me, the thing that I need for my needs, and it's gonna look different.
Right.
Right. And then the inclusion piece of it is just making sure, just making sure that all voices are being heard within this space, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, you can have a diverse area, you can have all the needs for everybody, but if I'm like, hey, thanks for coming in, but just kind of sit in the corner,
right?
That's not being inclusive, mm-hmm. right? That's not making sure that their voices are being heard. That's to make sure that their thoughts are being heard, and so that's a very, very quick overview of what DEI is, right? Mm-hmm. And you can have a lot of diversity and no equity and inclusion, right? Or mm-hmm. you can have some equity in there and not be diverse, right? Mm-hmm. So for For example, you can have, be equitable and inclusive, but the entire room is white dudes. Mm-hmm. Where's your diversity?
Right.
Right. Or at least your, where's your diversity in terms of gender and race and background? Right. Now, you may have diversity in terms of ideology, or you may have diversity in terms of thought, but no, but there's no diversity in terms of gender or race or things like that.
Life
so,
experience.
So, yeah. So you have to have, so that's kind of the, as I said, the overview of the three.
Sure. I guess, so I would say, I guess, even just from talking about that, that I feel like I could see how that looks in, you know, obviously the diversity senior officer role of your job. But how do you think that looks like in your, like the role of, as the, oh my God.
Director of Intercultural.
Yes.
the student facing piece. Yeah. Right. That within that role, I try to find ways to help students find their space on campus.
Sure.
Right. So, for example, so we have two orientations. Well, we have several orientations on campus, but within my office, we have two orientations. One is our, it's called Each One Teach One, is our new student of a color orientation. Then the other one is our, is we call it ISO, but it's our international student orientation. Okay. And we have those two orientations to help new students of color and international students get acclimated and just get comfortable in being in lily white Mount Vernon, Iowa.
Yep.
Now, granted, Cornell is a fairly diverse school. It's about 23-24% students of color on campus, which is, you know, it's a quarter of your campus. Yeah. We have 21, if I remember correctly, different countries represented on campus.
Cool.
You know, from a gender standpoint, we're probably one of the few schools that have more men than we have women on campus.
Sure.
So from a diversity standpoint, right, it's a diverse, I'm using my air quotes, and people can't see me. It's a diverse campus, right? But then you go walk around Mount Vernon, Iowa. Not so much.
Not so much.
Super white.
I mean, it does definitely feel like a small, like, white farm town.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
When you think of, like, Iowa farm towns, it's like, okay, well, a bunch of white folks.
Absolutely. And so,
really,
and
sweet people, though.
Really, I love it. I enjoy Mount Vernon, to be honest.
I've had a great time there.
Mount Vernon's a good time.
Girl, that Lincoln Wine Bar.
Come on now.
Okay, that pizza's fabulous.
Listen.
Jesse Sauerbrei, I love you.
Listen. So you need to go to Mount Vernon, go ahead and go to the Lincoln Wine Bar. Anyway, we got off track. Mm-hmm. If we get to talking about food, I'll be in all day. Mm-hmm. No, but it's a lot of our students aren't from Iowa, right? So if I remember correctly, just under 80% of our students are not from Iowa. So we got kids from all over the place. Chicago, Houston, New York, Cali, whatever. And so now we're bringing all these black and brown and other kids, these international kids, into lily white Iowa. Go. Mm-hmm. And so some folks may say, well, all students have an adjustment. You're right. You're not wrong, right? But there's a little bit more of an adjustment when you're a young black woman coming from Dallas, Texas to Mount Vernon, Iowa. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of a culture shock.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Or you're asking a Chinese, a male Chinese student from Shanghai, hey, welcome to America. You know,
there's going to be some cultural.
There's going to be a little culture shock, right? Yeah. So I remember I had a student, and she didn't tell me this till she was graduating. She's from China. And she was like, you know, Hemi, like, you know, you were the first American that I met when I got to the States. I
was way.
I said, shit, I'm sorry. I was like, I was the first person you met?
Oh, no.
God bless you, queen. But, you know, but I have that. You know, you get so many kids coming here. This is their first time in the States, you know, and then they're by themselves.
Yeah.
And they don't know anybody. I had a kid from the Bahamas. I ended up having to pick him up the day after because the day that he was supposed to come in, it was a snowstorm.
Oh,
so he's stranded in Chicago.
Talk about culture shock.
But listen.
That poor baby.
He's by himself. He's 18 years old and he's stranded in Chicago, in a snowstorm, right? And so that's why we have those type of programs to help them, kind of help them navigate that space. You know, what does that look like? You know, how do they find their space as a student of color or as an international student on campus, right? So, you know, we do different things. We talk about culture shock, We talk about, you know, finding your space and on campus. Mm-hmm. We give them like a mock class and what that's going to look like. And we do a just because I am insert identity doesn't mean this. We talk about stereotypes. Mm-hmm. I talk to them about just being themselves on campus. Sure. Like, you know, there are going to be folks who meet you who don't like you for whatever. Mm-hmm. Just be yourself, man. Well, as long as what you're doing is not detrimental to yourself or your community, mm-hmm. be yourself. Because the folks who aren't going to like you because you're black, because you're gay, because you're a woman, tall, short, right. whatever, they ain't going to like you regardless. You can cure cancer and they still not going to like you. So just right. might as well be yourself. So those are some of the things that we kind of help them with. Mm-hmm. And that's how, from a diversity, equity, and inclusion standpoint, we help our students.
Sure.
Amongst a whole lot of other stuff.
Totally.
So this week, Iowa passed a bill in mm-hmm. Senate to cap in-state tuition, and to put restrictions on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at Iowa's public universities. I feel like in Iowa, there's a lot of fear for some reason around, especially in other states too, but I can feel it here since we're all here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fear around including topics of DEI or including learning about slavery. There's like language changes, you know, instead of calling blacks slaves, they want to call them like enslaved people mm-hmm. and kind of like rewriting history again to avoid like that shameful piece. Mm-hmm. I think that some people... I don't know, marry yeah. with DEI mm-hmm. for some reason.
It's like an avoidance.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
Avoidance it, like, of anything that has to do with race anyway at right. all, period.
And it's hand in hand with like being woke, right? I feel like there's people that are like, oh, well, if we learn about DEI, then like the woke police are going to come and
sure.
we're going to have
sure
to
that
change
everybody's
everything.
PC
right, using
that.
Pronouns yeah. and shit. Mm-hmm. So like, what do you think is the driving fear as an educator and someone who works in higher education? Like, what is the driving fear behind learning about DEI? And this bill that was passed also made it so that Iowa's public universities, like, we're not going to hire or devote any more money to DEI, like, and reevaluating all the staff. So two questions. What's driving the fear? And two, what would it look like for DEI to be removed from universities?
I'm laughing because I, like, with the first question of what's driving the fear, I almost have the senior diversity officer answer, then also have Hemi's answer. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you both. Shit. Hemi's answer is there's this, I feel like, and of course this is just my opinion, there's this fear that they're going to take over. Like, these black folks and these queer folks and these trans folks, are, mm-hmm. they're going to take over and do things to us that we did to them, blah, 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 all that nonsense. Mm-hmm. We're gonna lose our country, right? You hear this, you already hear this rhetoric of, we're losing our country. First off, to who? Like,
right.
like I don't... And then,
to them, like, vague group.
Right. Like what do you mean you're losing your country as if this isn't mine just as much as it's yours, right?
Right, totally.
So there I feel like there's this fear that they are going to take over by they non white people, mm-hmm. right? Or
yeah.
non straight folks,
white
right?
folk,
are
yeah.
going to take over. Mm-hmm. When in all actuality, most folks just want to be left alone.
Right.
Like,
right.
I just want to be left alone. I just want to do what I need to do and not be bothered and not be shot at and not be called.
And to have
whatever.
The same opportunities as
exactly.
everybody else. Yeah.
That's it. I just want to be able to just to do what you do
yeah.
in my space.
I want to be able to live my life.
right. Right. So that's my Hemi answer, right? But I think as an educator, I think that's it's that fear of the unknown, right? And it's probably a little bit similar. There's that fear that you know, folks are going to quote unquote take over, and once again I'll ask, take over what? Like, you know, folks just want to be educated just like everyone else. Mm-hmm. We just want to make sure that we have the same opportunities that everyone has. Right? You know, we talk about education, a free education is supposed to be equal or equitable for everybody.
Sure.
Right. And so no, like these. Our DEI programs aren't trying to take away from the rest of the college. We're not trying to take away from the rest of the institution. We're just trying to shine a light. Hey, that the this group of people may or may not have a tougher time, or a tough, not even say tougher time, just a tough time adjusting, right? There are some things that they might be dealing with that we might need to have a conversation about, right?
Totally.
So for example, what we're seeing in a lot of universities is that men in general, I'll start there, just men in general aren't graduating college for whatever reason. And women, regardless of race, they're graduating at a crazy rate. And if you get more specific, black women are technically the most educated group in the country. Shout out to black women. Good job. Hell yeah. Right?
Go black women.
But if you, like I said, but men are just, we're not graduating. You know, men aren't being involved in any type of extracurricular activities outside of athletics. Mm-hmm. I love sports. If you know me, I love the fall. I'm watching college football from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., right? I'm a college coach, right? I played college ball, so I love sports. But the sheer fact that young men aren't being involved in different things outside of athletics is a problem.
Sure.
And when I say extracurricular activities, I'm talking about internships, study abroad opportunities, and insert any type of academic extracurricular activities, right? So now if you get away, you take away DEI, you won't be allowed to look at that other study and say, hey, we have a problem with this group of men, right? We have a problem with this group of students. Mm-hmm. So that, hey, we have to keep it equal, but everyone is not functioning and having success at an equal rate, right? So like I said, you can, and I start with just men, but then you break it down, men of color who are athletes, international students, right? So like there's an issue with some of our students, and taking away these programs will not allow us to focus on said issue. It's just like the Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter conversation. I didn't say all lives didn't matter. I'm just saying right now, black lives don't matter to some people.
Mm-hmm. I try and remind people that, like, on a day-to-day level, DEI looks like having handicap accessible restrooms, having bike lanes, having wide sidewalks. So it's not just like what your child is learning in school. Mm-hmm. It's access in a very simple way that is all around us. Even accessibility mode on your phone, having the ability to turn the volume up and down or increase your font size. Mm-hmm. It's all about making things accessible and equitable so everyone can have an opportunity to access the same things.
So to that bill, right? You know, and I was actually just looking at the bill this morning. I was looking at it even last week. So as a private institution, you know, I don't want to put it out there, but we got a little leeway because it's really only for the three state institutions, right? Mm-hmm. So the bill basically says that, you know, it wants to, you know, as an institution, you have all your services has to be for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, it's like, hey, having a black culture center, that's not for everybody, so you have to get rid of it. Or having an LGBTQ center, have to be get rid of it. Native American, so on and so on, right? So I'm like, okay. So to your point, Sarah, you talked about accessibility. So, okay, so that means that if you have an internet student service offices, do you have to get rid of that? Because that's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. If you have a disabilities coordinator, right? Do you have to get rid of that? Because that's not for everybody. So now, and I don't, and I, like I said, I was kind of looking through it and I was trying to type in just to see what's the language around those later two, and there's no language. So the way I'm interpreting said bill is that means that you have to look at international student services, you have to look at ability services, maybe even counseling services, all these different services you have to look at in a different way, because some of those services aren't for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be for everybody, because everyone has, once again, everybody has different needs.
Right.
And I think that, like, just disregards the fact that, you know, like, white people are the dominant culture, you know, and that every space is for them regardless, you know, like, and so when they aren't, like, when centered, something isn't for them, then it's like, well, what do you mean?
Right. Right. Well, what I mean is I'm walking in this space and there's nobody that looks like me. That's an issue.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, and it's not that I don't sorry, white people, it's not that I don't want you to be there. I just want to be able to walk in and be my black self and whatever that looks like, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to walk in and look around in the room like, hey, I'm the only black dude in here, right? Mm-hmm. Or with my education classes, I used to walk in, hey, I'm the only dude in here, right? Now, I'm not saying that we need to get, not have more any less women teachers, but why we need to start having a conversation of have more men teaching, right? We need to have a conversation of having more women in the STEM field, and so on and so on, right? Like, so if you take away, you know, the opportunity to have these conversations, i.e. DEI initiative, and then it becomes status quo.
Yeah. I have a question. Would this law affect things like Title IX and Title VI?
It could potentially. Okay.
And would you do us a favor and talk about what those things are?
Right. So Title IX, I think that's like the one that's probably the most quote unquote well known.
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know what Title IX is, Title IX was started in 1972, and was basically the legislation that told schools they can't discriminate based on sex and gender. So it's basically how women's sports got started, right? So without Title IX, there's no Caitlin Clark to have opportunities to do what she's doing.
Hear that, Iowans? Yeah.
without Title IX, there's no opportunity for your Angel Reese's of the world, your Cheryl Swoops of the world, and so on and so on, right? And so it made schools have to look at things through an equitable lens, right? And so making sure if you have something for the men, you have to have something equitable, not necessarily equal, but equitable for women as well.
Sure.
Whether it's funding, whether it's opportunities, resources, so on and so on. So that's Title IX. Okay. And then Title VI, I gotta make sure I look at my notes because I always mess it up. Okay, there's Title VI and Title VII, right? So those are two separate things, right? So
I'm assuming then that there's a Title VIII too.
Not that I know of. I don't think so.
hasn't been written yet.
there might be. I haven't found it yet because I'm looking for 1, 2, 3, and 4. Right? No, but so Title VI is the legislation that no federally funded institution can discriminate based on race and ethnicity and national origin, right? So. And then Title VII is the same thing, but for employment.
Oh, okay.
And so all these different legislations are in place to make sure, hey, University of Iowa, Iowa State, you and I, or even some of the even private schools, hey, you can't not allow students to come to your school because it's illegal.
Right.
Right. So now, to be honest, I don't know how that's going to affect it. I'm going to assume that it might, right? I think with this iteration of it, it probably won't be just the way it's written, but at some point it can affect it. I'm going to assume at some point I'm sure the conversations come up like, well, what about Title IX? What about all these? No, do we need to relook at that? Mm-hmm. Then I think this law is definitely a problem, but it can lead to bigger problems.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does kind of feel like, and I feel this way a lot about, you know, some of the things that have happened recently, but it feels like, you know, we got to a certain place where like certain protections are in place for people who did not receive or have a hard time receiving equality or equity, you know, and space at the table, you know, and inclusion, right? And they're just, I feel like there's just like a chipping away of like slowly removing any of these protections, any of these things that ensure, you know, our right to be at the table,
right,
and the thing, and giving us the opportunities that we need to succeed as well.
I mean, I think people forget, like, at one point it was illegal for a black person to go to school.
It wasn't that long ago. It was
illegal for a black person and a white person to get married. It was illegal for two men to get married. Right. It was illegal for women to vote. Mm-hmm. Like, I think folks forget that.
It's
right?
Recent history. Right.
Yeah. It wasn't like
It was when your parents were alive. You guys.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, like, so Title VII, that was in 1964.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So Oh, that's a long time. No, wasn't that long ago. Uh-huh.
That was the year that my dad was born. Right, that
wasn't that long ago, right? So yeah. These laws and these legislations were put into place so it was illegal to discriminate, right? And so now I feel like we're moving in that direction of, wait a minute, hold on. We gave y'all too much. We got to take it back.
Oh, yeah, the cultural pushback.
Yeah, we've given you too much.
Yeah.
Well, when Liz Bennett was here talking about abortion, she pointed out the fact that from the day that, you know, Roe versus Wade was set as a precedent to make decisions, people started planning and plotting and raising money. And so this stuff isn't new. It. Yeah. No. And I feel like people trust that, okay, well, we codified this law or the bill has passed and we're fine. But it's like, no, because the people on the opposite end of that you are actively trying to figure out how to dismantle your safety.
Yeah.
And they won't stop until they do. And I feel like within the past 5 years, we've really seen a shift of like these moderates to conservatives feeling really comfortable to use their voice. Uh-huh. And this is how they choose to do it. Uh-huh. And they come out in drones when we vote and they are comfortable speaking whatever beliefs they have to everyone. And I just want to remind people, don't get comfortable. Uh-huh. We can't like just stop. This is an active fight that we have to participate in to protect equality for ourselves and for our offspring.
Yeah.
I remember somebody, I was talking to someone and someone, and I can't remember the conversation, and it was brought to me. It was like, you don't understand how important DEI is, right? And I was kind of like, you know, you're talking to a black man who lives in Iowa, right? Do I understand? Yes, I understand how important this work is, right? This work is important, for one, because it affects me personally, right? This isn't just a job for me, right? This isn't just something that I do because I want to get paid. And I work in education. I don't really get paid like that. So I'm not trying to get rich, right?
You're not doing it for the money.
No, this is not for the bread, right? This is not. No, I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to get, I'm going to get some great money and buy this big multi-billion-dollar. No, I'm not buying no multi-billion-dollar mansions and nowhere. But this work is personal for me, right? So when I see these laws passing and I see all this conversation, I'm like, well, this, for one, this is my livelihood.
Sure.
And two, this is personal for me.
Yeah.
Right. No, when I get a student come into my office, earlier I talked about students coming in, and I get a student coming to my office and they're crying because they feel like that, you know, their professor isn't giving them the grade that they deserve because they're black. That's a problem, right? Or their professor, or not a professor, or a classmate says some wild ass shit like, hey, you know, you're cute for a black girl. Well, what does that mean? Like, you know, or just and whatever all the other things that I've had to deal with in terms of, and not only at Cornell, but just over my 15 plus years of being in education, and some of the stuff is like, it's, you know, it's small and minute, right? But that shit adds up. You know, you hear it over and over and over, and it gets annoying.
Well, it betrays internal bias. Right?
It does.
Like, yeah.
You know, it
may not be overt, but it's covert, you know, and that covert racism or bias or whatever is still going to be acting, you know, in choices that people make internally in terms of structures and systems and institutions, but also in people's, you know, day-to-day lives.
And to be honest, it's probably one of the most dangerous forms of, because
the covert stuff. Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, well, I didn't know I was being racist. Okay. Well, I'm trying to tell you are, but now you're telling me you're not, right?
Right.
Why are you offended?
And it's the white guilt. Right. Like, oh, yeah. I didn't know. It really is. And it just like,
it's
totally
like you can't be guilty of it if you were ignorant of it.
Right.
It's like, no, I'm sorry, baby.
Yeah.
And
impact matters.
I'll be the first one to tell you, like, we all have some form of bias, right?
And that's, 100%.
And that's fine, right? But if I tell you, hey, you said this to me, your next line can't be, oh, well, that's just how I am.
Right.
Yeah. That's okay. How I was raised.
Like, well, you need to be raised differently.
Right. Yeah.
we need to raise you
right.
differently.
That's not a good excuse. Right. That's not. I mean, there are no good excuses, but it's like we were just talking about the shadow work, you know? It's like, we don't want to look at our ugliness, you know what I mean? We don't want to address it. We want to pretend like it doesn't exist. and we want to keep moving forward.
Right. And there's a lot of ugliness. And then, I don't want to say that, I don't want to say that it's okay that we have the ugliness, but we have it.
Right.
Acknowledge it.
Yeah. And it has to be okay so you can acknowledge right. it exactly. and then work on it.
Accept it in yeah. order to move on. Yep, exactly. Right.
I want to hear about your experience as a Black educator, particularly in Iowa, where our schools are predominantly white. What has that journey been like for you, especially in higher education?
Yeah, academia.
At a private university.
It's been, in some situations, it's been tough. Some situations, not so much. So my educational background is small private liberal arts college, right? So I went to a small private school here in Iowa.
You went in Decorah, right?
Yeah, I went to, so I graduated from Luther.
Oh, that's right. It's beautiful up there.
Oh, it's gorgeous up there.
Listeners in and outside of Iowa, if you haven't been to Decorah, go. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
It is don't go in the winter though.
Oh yeah, no, don't come to Iowa in the winter, period.
We're going to winter. But my journey has been interesting because, I mean, I wasn't planning on going into higher education. As a kid, I wanted to be a computer programmer, right? I mean, then I think I got to, it might have been my sophomore year in high school when I took a computer programming class and I was talking to my teacher and I was asking, like, well, what's it like being a computer programmer? He's like, yeah, well, and this was in, late 90s, right? And so he's like, yeah, you're sitting in a cubicle for 8 hours a day and you're typing programs. I'm like, wait a minute, so I can't talk to people? And if you know me.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine that for
that's
you.
That's not a job for him.
Yo, I was like, yo, you want me to sit in a, nah. And he was like, well, you can make, and at the time, you can make $80,000. I'm like, that's a lot of money,
right,
man.
In the late 90s, that was a lot.
Yeah,
it was. I was like, 80 grand, that's a lot of bread. And I was like, no. So
I can't sell my soul for that.
No, I can't do it. And so I started. So my next day, I was like, well, I wouldn't mind being a teacher. So I wanted to be a high school history teacher. Mm. You know, my grandmother taught, my uncle's a school administrator. So my dad had taught at one point. And so education has always been in my family.
Mm-hmm. That makes me feel really warmly towards you because my dad was a high school history
listen,
teacher.
I was like, I want to be a high school history teacher.
That's so cute.
And I had isn't it so cute?
Like,
I feel so fuzzy.
Yes.
So I had a high school history teacher, Mr. Belmont, and he was, I don't want to call him a conspiracy theorist, but he was close.
He said some crazy shit.
Yo, man, we watched the and I'm gonna get to your to your question. It's leading.
You've got
up.
A story
We're
to
setting
tell.
Up context.
Leading yeah. up, okay. Right? Okay. So Mr. Belmont, we were watching the video of a JFK assassination.
Yeah.
And like the actual video, see him getting shot, and he was like, "See, look, his head rocked back, and blah blah blah." And so I'm watching it like, you know what? 2 + 2 is not coming to 4 here, right, sir. And so we started really talking about American history, not just, hey, this is what happened, this is what happened. He really dove into it, right? Mm. He was one of the first teachers or first history teacher that I'd had that made us really see try to help us see the big picture of everything, right? Sure. He wasn't trying to get us to think a certain way, but he just wanted us to say, hey, listen, like, everything on the surface is not always what it seems to be, right? And so I'm like, okay, all right, this history thing might be okay. Mm-hmm. I can do that. Fast forward to I went to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. Shout out to the Salukis. Yeah, I had a little school trouble. Mm-hmm. Yeah, went down there. Had to leave there a little early.
It happens.
And now when I was down, if you know anything about Southern Illinois, it is... There's Williamson County in Southern Illinois, right? There's a book called Bloody Williamson, and it talks about the, for lack of a better word, the race riots that went on down there, right? And so that was one of the most racially turbulent areas of the country in Southern Illinois, right? And so I remember reading that book and was just like, okay. And then just that area, Southern Illinois is not, that's the South. It's not Illinois.
It's like Missouri is like the South.
Yeah, that's the South. And it's
racist.
Yeah. And that was the first time second time to my face someone called me the N-word. Right?
Oh, man.
I was 18. Somebody said it. I was like, what you want to do? I don't know who was in that car. I was by myself. It was like 11 o'clock at night. But I tell you, this guy was on my side because they kept going. I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. I don't know how that was going to look.
That could have been bad.
So I'm at Southern and I'm looking to leave, right? And so I started thinking about, okay, where can I transfer to? And so I'm thinking about different schools. I was thinking Eastern Illinois. There was North Park University in Chicago. And then it was 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm at the library and I'm thinking to myself, like, man, what was that school in Iowa that recruited me to come to go to school there? I was like, Luther College, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, Luther College. Okay, let me go check this place out. And initially I didn't go there because like, I'm not going to Iowa to go to school.
I understand the feeling.
There ain't no black people there. It's small. I'm cool.
I'm too cool for
it. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm not going there. I'm good. So fast forward, I get to, I go on my visit and there was this professor, Valerie Sigwart. And Valerie, it's a black woman. I think she was from D.C. Like, I mean, super smart lady. And she was just like, yo, we need some young brothers here like you, man. And we need to fight the system. I was just like, yo, they got teachers like this here. Is she black? Yo, I don't know who this lady is, but I'm coming here.
Yeah.
So I get to Luther and I play football, right? Mm-hmm. We had 125 dudes on the roster. I was the only black dude on the team. There was one other South Korean dude. I think he was adopted, and he grew up in Iowa. So it was two folks of color on the entire team. Now, we had three black coaches, but Luther was lily white. And it was an adjustment because it was completely different than what I grew up in. I grew up in Waukegan, Illinois, which is predominantly black and brown. And everything that comes with predominantly black and brown people, both good and bad, right? Southern Illinois was, it's PWI, but it was a lot of black folks down there, right? And so then now I leave these two spaces and go to Luther and just like, yo, how did I get here? So I say all that to say, part of the reason why I do this work, yeah, what is that?
I don't know. Somebody's acting a fool.
Somebody is losing their mind. So I say all that to say I do this work because there are so many kids who are like me who go to these spaces, sure, who don't have anyone to turn to,
yeah,
who don't have anyone to talk to get it, seek advice from, to make them feel like it's okay to be whatever you are in this space, mm-hmm, right? I was blessed enough to have some of my classmates, and I hate using the word allowed or let me, but let me just be myself. It was never, well, why do you do that? But it was more like, okay, Hemi, help me understand. Why do you wear this? Or why do you listen to this? It was really, I'm trying to learn about you and your culture, as opposed to like, hey, I know you like rap music, but could you not listen to it? So, no, fuck that. I'm about to listen to my T.I. loud as shit, and ain't nothing you gonna do about it. And so that's why I do what I do. Like, that's why, yeah. But it's been different. And part of the reason why it's been difficult is because sometimes you work in spaces that don't allow you to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't allow you to just be your authentic self, right? And
yeah.
I talk differently sometimes, right?
Code switch.
I hate it. And I understand sometimes there is a need. I get it. But I hate it sometimes. I was like, I just want to talk. I just want to be be me, right?
Sure.
Like, folks know that I like gym shoes, right? Or for those who don't grow up in the Chicago area, sneakers, right? I like gym shoes, right? So I wear Jordans to work. I wear a suit. Got my Jordans on, right? Like, yeah. Folks like, oh, those must be new. Yeah. Where'd you get? So, like, that's part of me just being comfortable. Mm. I remember I had a student tell me, I've noticed that the way you talk to us and the way you talk to, like, administration is exactly the same. I'm like, what you mean? You just talk. You don't really switch that much. I'm like, no. Really? I was like, man, I switch too much. But apparently I don't, which is cool.
Yeah.
But with that being said, it can be difficult because it's hard being in these spaces. Or you walk in these spaces, you have this imposter syndrome. Like, do I deserve to be here? Am I smart enough to be here? And obviously I am. Well, obviously I'm intelligent enough to be here. But it's like, do I deserve to be here? Am I just the dumb black coach, or am I just the whatever? And no, right? And then with black women, it's even worse. Mm-hmm. It's even worse. Like, they come in there and And it's constantly having to prove that they belong in this space, right?
Yeah.
And it's not even, unfortunately, not even just with white people. Sometimes there's other black people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever heard the term all skin folk and kin folk, mm-hmm. right? Having to prove that. But when you do find a group of people, your tribe, your folks that you can connect with, oh, it's nothing like it. It's nothing like it. So to answer your question, my experience as a black educational professional is difficult from time to time because trying to find your space in there. But once you find your people, you just move. So I tell folks, just be you, man.
Yeah.
Right. No, just do good work. You know, and I heard that from another professional, just because at the end of the day, good work is going to come through.
Yeah.
You know, but unfortunately, we have situations like I can't remember her name, but it was the vice president of student affairs down at Lincoln University who was a black woman. He ended up killing herself.
Yeah.
Because she was being bullied by administration and other people, right? So, like, you read stuff like that, and folks are like, "What does that happen all the time? Mm-hmm. All the time, having to prove that I deserve to be here." Hope that answered your question. I don't know if it did, but that was my roundabout way of talking.
That was a long answer, but yes, I think it answered my question.
You shut your mouth.
I feel like we know a lot more about you through that. And I think that was, thank you for sharing that experience with us.
And honestly, that experience helped me continue doing what I do.
Sure.
It gives me the confidence to do what I do. Just to be like, yo, I'm just going to be me, man. Like, yeah. I'm going to talk how I talk. Of course, I'm not walking in there being inappropriate, but I'm going to talk how I talk. I'm going to give the ideas what I think is right. I'm going to come up with different initiatives I think was right. I'm going to function how I function, because if I don't, then I think that I'm going to perpetuate that stereotype of black folks in education. Just do what you need to do and move on. Sure. I can't do that. Sorry.
I mean, it makes me think of all the ways that I feel like different cultures are supposed to assimilate
yeah.
to white culture, mm-hmm. you know, and that's not okay,
mm-mm.
you know, and the ways that, like, you can only be acceptable as long as you, like, approach whiteness, or the way that mm-hmm. you, like, mimic or, mm-hmm. you know, assimilate to whiteness. And it's like a ways to, like, say, like, we don't see color,
yeah.
you know? And it's like, really, you're just going to erase my identity, my culture, my heritage,
my black ass,
you know?
Standing
right?
here.
Like, come on,
right.
you know? Like, we're different people, you uh-huh. know? We have different, you know, experiences. We come from different places. Our, you know, family culture is different, but that doesn't mean that I am not as smart as you.
Right.
Or that I also don't belong here, or I don't get to... deserve to get paid the same mm-hmm. wage because of the same work that we do,
mm-hmm.
you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like,
I mean, this is why having these DEI programs are important.
Yeah,
right. It helps formulate these conversations. Mm-hmm. Right. It helps students feel comfortable. It helps with student success.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, as I said, you ask a black woman from New York to move to Decorah, Iowa. And say, hey, I want you to be successful. But they walk in, there's nobody who looks like her. Mm-hmm. There's nobody who she can connect with culturally.
Yeah.
There's no food. Like, even down to, you know, like, folks may be like, it's not important. But down where you get your hair done at? Where you get your hair cut? That was one of my first questions. Hey, man, who cuts hair around here? Because I need to, they can't even have me run around looking like Grizzly Adams, man. I need to get chopped up right. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's wildly important for people. You know,
totally.
With my international students, they talk a lot about missing certain foods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wish they can have the food. They understand it's not going to be exactly like home, but the fact that they can't readily just get this food can really affect your mental health. It can affect your grades, everything. It can affect your physical health.
Mm-hmm.
And so, getting away from these programs is going to hurt our kids.
Totally. Yeah.
I think a lot about assimilating to whiteness and how I am, like, actively trying to decolonize many areas of my life,
yeah.
and that it requires a lot of intention on my part to do so. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, kind of like what you said, removing these DEI programs, like, almost forces people to assimilate because you're taking away their safety. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
ooh, I like that.
Safety. I know that's like the goal is to assimilate to that cis hetero white male norm, but that's not what makes our like our human race great.
Mm-hmm.
It's right. The diversity, and it is people protecting their cultures no matter where they're living. Mm-hmm. And people honoring their traditions. Mm-hmm. And their ancestors. Yeah. And I appreciate the fact you and I have talked before about safe blacks. And to me, safe blacks are people that assimilate to whiteness, people that refuse to bring up culture.
I've never heard this term before.
Well, to be fair, you're not black, so right. I guess I've never talked to you about it.
No, but, that's fair.
Yeah, I've just been thinking about it lately, especially in some of like the activism work that I want to do or that I see others do. Mm. And I feel like there are certain people and there are a lot of different like names for this culturally, like an Uncle Tom, like people who just kiss the asses of white people.
You know, the black people that white people are like, oh, my God, you're so articulate.
Yes. Oh, my God, you're so smart. But Sarah's not really black because she grew up with white parents. Right. And it's like a safe black would be like, yeah. But me, I'm like, no, let's right. talk about that. Mm-hmm. And I think we need more people who are willing to, you know, not be safe, not allow these conversations to be had in their presence, yeah. Stay true to who they are, mm-hmm. wear their hair how they want, wear whatever mm-hmm. outfits they want, because it does make other people more confident. I was listening to something. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was at that Black Women Walking play. But they had said in there, like, you're waiting for the next person to take the step and the next person's waiting for you to take the step and no one ever is going to move. Right. So someone has to be the first one to be like, this is who I am. I'm going to stay this way. I hope it creates safety for you to be who you are. Mm. But dismantling these programs is not going to make, it's not creating the environment that I think is sought in creating like these restrictive mm-hmm. bills.
Sure.
We're going to get to a place where
it is regressive.
It is
sure.
regressive.
Very yeah. regressive.
We're going to get to a place where, like, you know, we don't have a need for intercultural administrators because there will be no one coming to these schools.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to the place where, and I think we should get here anyway, but HBCUs are desired among Black people mm-hmm. and that they don't even consider PWIs. And mm-hmm. what's that going to do to their athletic department or mm-hmm. the funding that these schools receive for their white students? Mm-hmm. So I see it moving very far away from whatever positive intent, if any, was at the core of these missions.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, what is a PWI? I know what HBCUs are.
Predominantly white institutions.
Okay, got it.
So there are PWIs, predominantly white institutions, HBCUs.
Historically black yep. colleges.
And then there are, if I remember, is AAPI. So there's Asian American Pacific Islander serving institutions. There are mm-hmm. HSIs, Hispanic serving institutions.
Got it.
A lot of those institutions, the latter two are on the West Coast.
Sure.
So there's a lot of different names, right?
Sure.
And so to your point, Sarah, you talked about dismantling these programs and assimilation and safe blacks, right? And so, I think that when you try to make a safe black, right, that's you saying, hey, I want to erase who you are,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I don't want to know anything about who you are. And where you come from and what you do, right? And then as folks are like, okay, yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. Like, bro, that's you, for one, that's not healthy,
mm-hmm.
right? And then two, the folks who are trying to erase you, they truly don't want you there anyway.
Right.
They don't want you in that space, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you gotta be yourself, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying you need to walk in there and be inappropriate and do crazy shit. No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is you got to be yourself. And if folks can't accept you for who you are, then why would you want to be in said space?
Absolutely.
Right. That does not make sense. And then now also what's funny, as you were talking, I was thinking about, and so in higher ed, there's this thing called the admission cliff. So starting in well, this is what futurists are saying. So started in about 2028. Well, no, actually it might be next year. Started next year, you're going to start seeing a huge decline in just kids going to college. Because and I think it was back in 2008, market crashed, people weren't having kids and so on and so on. So we're not going to have as many high school graduates. But what we are going to start seeing is a higher number of students of color, international students, and lower socioeconomic students going to college. So getting rid of all these programs, all right, go for it. Good luck, because in about 3 to 4 years, your schools are going to start looking a little darker than you want. A little more colorful than you really wanted to, right? And so then now you bring up all these schools, but hey, let's diversify, but you don't want to have programs to support them.
Right.
Right. You don't want to have the thing to support these kids.
Yeah.
And they're kids. These aren't like grown ass adults. Yeah. These are children.
Children.
Right.
Yeah.
Children trying to figure out what life is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I understand that the cis white male is trying to figure out life as well.
Yeah.
I get it, right?
Oh, totally.
I understand. That's why I'm an educator. I want to help all of my students. But the little black boy who goes to school at University of Iowa or UNI or Luther or whatever, his needs are a little bit different because he's walking into a little bit different space.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to, as a college, to acknowledge that.
Totally.
Agreed.
And that's just, that's like in general.
Yeah.
Right?
In general. Like, yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, we're reaching the end of our time.
Is it the time?
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jamie, time flies when we're talking to you.
Sure does.
So fun.
So fun. I know that you've been really looking forward to playing our word association game.
Oh come on now.
All right. I forgot about that.
Jamie loves to talk shit.
I do. I talk my shit.
So this fits in well with who he is as a person.
Yes.
I talk my shit. People know I talk my shit.
So our game still doesn't have a name. If anyone wants to just throw one at us, I have been asking for months now and we've gotten nothing. And I also feel like no one does this game correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to go through our words in our game. And instead of telling us the first association that comes to your mind, which no one seems to do anyway, why don't you just sum up your feelings about these words? And like two words or less. We do not want to
two words.
Hear
I will do a shout out to Mari. She's the one who got it right.
Yes. Yep. Thank you, Mari. But apparently no one, has taken notes from you.
Right.
So we're just going to succumb to the masses here.
Shake it up. Here we go.
Two words or less.
Yeah. Right. Let's just, I know that you like to talk. So I'm just saying let's keep it in.
I can do that. I can do that.
Okay. Ready?
I feel the shade, but it's okay.
I'm just,
it's a little shady in this funky joint.
Yeah, I got a little dark.
Looking out for all of us.
Whatever.
Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Abortion.
Very complicated.
Feminism. I know how you really feel about feminism, but let's see what you tell our listeners.
There's, oh my God, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not, oh my God, what's the word? I'm trying to do it in just two words. Mm.
Well, you can use three. Just don't,
I know.
Keep it short.
I'm trying to keep it short. Misguided.
Monogamy.
For me.
Dating.
Complicated.
Black Lives Matter.
I love it.
Queer.
So what I'm looking for, two words. Very broad.
Marriage.
Not for everybody.
Parenting.
Not for everybody.
Polyamory.
You got it.
Republican.
Misunderstood.
Nepotism.
Nepotism. I want to do it.
You want to have nepotism?
Yeah.
You want to create nepotism for your offspring?
I'm selfish, yes.
Democrat.
Misunderstood.
Barbie.
Toys.
Psychedelics.
I'm straight.
Politics.
Crazy.
Blue Lives Matter.
Oh my God, what's the word I'm looking for? Blue Lives Matter. It's negative response.
Cannabis.
Helpful.
Religion.
Complicated.
Patriarchy.
Doesn't help me.
Therapy.
It's needed.
Men.
It's needed.
Plastic surgery.
plastic surgery. Teaches on. I know that's not two words, teaches on.
Fitness.
Essential.
Higher education.
Complicated.
And everyone's favorite portion of our show, if you could add a song to our sex playlist,
yo,
what would it be?
Shit.
Oh, and do you have a sex playlist?
Absolutely. I'm going to my list right now.
Here we go.
Don't you worry.
Just one song. We don't need the whole list.
Quit being a hater. You know, I'm going to have to teach you not to be a hater because this is ridiculous.
Listen, I'm just controlling the narrative of our show, okay? That's my job.
Oh, man. Let's go. You know what? I'm going to go Freaking You by Jodeci.
That is a classic.
Oh, can I add one more?
Yes, add one more.
One more. All right, so I'm only adding this one because it's not really that known. It's one of my frat brothers called Give It To Me, and his name's Cecil Jones. That's a... Not just because that's my little bro, but...
Good song.
That shit's fire. That shit's fire. So those are my Freaking You by Jodeci and Give It To Me by Cecil Jones.
Love it.
There you go, listeners.
I have a question, though, too.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. No.
I've been wanting to ask for people's book recommendations.
Oh, yeah. My book recommendations. Yeah. I got a couple, but I'm not going to do too many. But and now these are all books that I've used my ear coach read, according to a friend of mine. I'm not really reading because I listen to audiobooks.
Audiobooks, sure. Whatever.
I agree. That's not reading. Whatever. But listening.
Whatever.
Whatever. So one, I would say Dear White America by Tim Wise. And for, of course, White Fragility by Dr. Robin DiAngelo. How to Be Anti-Racist by Ibram Kendi. I would say for educators, if you're an educator, you should read this. And it's Why You Are All a Man. Oh, another one, The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. Go to my notes. Sorry if you hear it in the background.
We did.
Another one is called How Human Connections Drive Success in College by Peter Felton. And the last one would probably be Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria by Beverly Daniel Tatum. Those are a couple of the books that I say folks
Thank
should go out
you.
There and read.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
We love reading.
I do.
And it is reading. I don't care if it's listening, whatever.
Right. Honestly.
Haters.
Okay. Well, we're going to agree to disagree on that one,
sure.
You guys.
Whatever.
Haters.
The book information got into my head.
I got it.
From an avid reader with actual literature books in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Okay, whatever.
Diversity.
Right.
Okay.
Diversity.
Accessibility.
Listen, it only matters sometimes.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. When Sarah says it matters.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I appreciate y'all having me on, though.
Kimi, we're so happy
for coming.
To have had you.
Appreciate it.
This was an important conversation. like I said at the beginning, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, making sure that we encompass that into our lives and the way we treat others is something that's important to all of us. I think our listeners will find it important too.
Yep.
Where can our listeners find you, Hemi?
You could find me at Cornell College.
You want them to go find you there?
No, please don't find me there. Please don't find. I would say in terms of this work that I do, you can look me up on LinkedIn. A lot of the things that I'm doing professionally, of course, is on LinkedIn.
That's so professional.
We've never had anyone reference their LinkedIn before.
That is fabulous, though. You know,
because I mean, honestly, like my social media is, I post a lot, but I don't at the same time. So I mean, I do have an Instagram and Facebook, but yeah, if you want
to, it's more for your personal stuff.
if you want to find me professionally or whatever, right, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can even find me on my IG. It is private, but you can find me. It's the African Kid from the Town. So you can find me there. I will be speaking at the Women's Lead Change Conference in April. I'm here in town. I will be talking about allyship. What does it mean to be a good ally and accomplice? So I think they have like a men's track. So I'll be talking to men and what that looks like, you know, and being an ally and accomplice too, for women.
Do you have an OnlyFans we could find you on?
Not yet. I'm still trying to figure out what my content's gonna be. I once said I'd sell feet, but I got ugly feet, so. Well, once I get that,
some
I got
people
you.
Are very into that.
Yeah, they are.
Listen, I once I figure out my niche, I'll send it over to you. I got bills to pay.
Okay, we'll add that in the show notes.
I love it.
Only fans.
Well, listeners, thank you so much for joining us on this journey.
Another journey.
Yeah, another journey that we're concluding here.
Yes, and if you could go like and share and subscribe and rate us. And share this with every single person who you know.
Yeah.
Especially your racist, bigoted, please ass do. Fucking friends and family.
Please do. Tell them they can come see me too.
Oh, we're sending them to Hemi.
Come see me.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening.
We love you.
We love you. Goodbye.
Bye.